Well, we're familiar with the fact that the fossil fuel industry and the corporations that depend upon it have long been disseminating doubt about the science of climate change. But what if much of what we now call neoliberalism, deregulation, inequality, and massive transfers of wealth to the wealthy, is really the result of these corporate elites having fully accepted the reality of catastrophic climate change decades ago? Here is my commentary about that. Once upon a time, when I was a boy, in the 1950s and 60s, most of us took it for granted that every part of the world was in some stage of an unstoppable world historical process called progress, or modernization. This meant integration of the world economy, what we would now call globalization, under the free market. It meant free trade, open borders and international travel, faster and easier communication, constant technological innovation, equality, at least in theory, and cheaper and universally available consumer goods. It also meant cultural assimilation, that non-Western peoples and cultures would become civilized. They would accept Western rationalism, and primitive practices and superstitious beliefs would gradually fade away. There were some obstacles for this smooth progress, such as communism, beatniks and hippies, the peace movement, and the struggles over civil rights in the South. But for the owners and managers of capital, the ruling class, progress and modernization meant paying relatively high wages and taxes to keep peace with workers and to make possible, or at least believable, the American dream. At least the upper layers of the working class could look forward to an increasing cornucopia of commodities. However, beginning around the time of the Vietnam War, several things happened to weaken the support of capitalists for this system. Capital began to run out of profitable investment opportunities for at least two reasons. First, the demand for consumer goods that had been starved during World War II became saturated. Second, the recovery of the production systems of Germany and Japan from the destruction of the war gave U.S. firms more competition, cutting into profits. So U.S. capital faced a crisis of surplus productive capacity. And if that were not enough, by the 1980s, ruling elites were beginning to read the writing on the wall, that is, the work of scientists warning of what would happen to the planet if capitalist production continued to pour increasing amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere. In his newest book, Down to Earth, Bruno Latour makes clear how this problem played out politically. Not only did a warming planet mean that capitalists could not expect to go on profitably producing more and more stuff and employing an expanding workforce, but that at some not too distant time, the whole fabric of society would probably come undone. At some point, not too far away, heat waves, drought, floods, and crop failures would mean massive and chaotic dislocation of the population. Governments would fall, meaning no state protection of the money and property of wealthy individuals, families, and corporations. The costs of preventing all this by moving to carbon-neutral forms of production and transportation would be enormous, and in fact would require a degree of state intervention that would probably mean the end of capitalism, that is, of the private ownership and control of production. So the ruling class renounced any idea that they were part of a system of worldwide progress and adopted the ideology we now call neoliberalism. Rather than capital having any obligation, moral or contractual, to workers and their dependents, every individual was to be responsible for him or herself, ready to move at short notice to another employer or even assume, like an Uber driver or an adjunct university professor, the status of an independent contractor. Politicians, responsive as always to wealthy individuals, corporations, and banks, loosened and removed regulations that had provided some protection for the people from the ups and downs of the capitalist economy. Business, and increasingly the state, no longer assumed any responsibility for the well-being of all the people. As science began to warn the public that climate change caused by human activity, that is, corporate activity, posed a serious threat to all life, the industries most responsible for generating CO2 began to sow a propaganda of denial and doubt, aiming at undercutting sustained public demand for adequate action. The plan of the ruling class is now to suck the system dry with massive transfers of wealth from the poor to the rich by privatization, complex credit instruments, and changes to tax laws favoring corporations and the rich. They are getting while the getting is good, while building their private luxury bunkers in isolated places. The American dream has lost its credibility, leading George Carlin to assert, "They call it the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it." As Bruno Latour nicely sums it up, all this is part of a single phenomenon. The elites have been so thoroughly convinced that there would be no future life for anyone that they decided to get rid of all the burdens of solidarity as fast as possible, hence the deregulation. They have decided that a sort of gilded fortress would have to be built for those, a small percentage, who would be able to make it through, hence the explosion of inequalities. And they have decided that, to conceal the crass selfishness of such a flight out of the shared world, they would have to reject absolutely the threat at the origin of the headlong flight, hence the denial of climate change. So on this analysis, Latour claims it is now obvious that the climate question is at the heart of all geopolitical issues and that it is directly tied to questions of injustice and inequality. We can, says Latour, thank Donald Trump for making this clear, for he is the shameless cheerleader and facilitator for climate denial, deregulation, and the explicit refusal of the rights of immigrants who are fleeing the consequences of colonial and post-colonial oppression, and increasingly of drought and crop failure. But seeds of opposition adequate to the situation are being sown. The Green New Deal, the upcoming October Earth Strike, and Extinction Rebellion. Links to these will be on the webpage for today's show. Capital would like us to go on cashing in a billion years of planetary savings bonds and blowing it on assorted bling, to quote from Richard Powers' wonderful novel about trees and forests called The Overstory. The alternative is to get on board with a deeply ecological and political movement that, like the ones I just mentioned, goes beyond mere gradual and market-based reductions of greenhouse gases. The movement we need in order to survive is one that understands that we do not just live in a place we call the environment, but are now woven inextricably into the warp and woof of the thin and delicate network of soil, air, plants, and animals that constitute life on the earth. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Rainforest, mist and mystery, teeming green. Green and brain facing the bottom. Climate control center for the world. Ancient cord coexistence hacked by a parasitic greedhead scam. Sarawak to Amazonas, Costa Rica to mangy BC hills, cortege rhythm of falling timber. What kind of currency grows in these new deserts, these brand new floodplains?
And that's Bruce Coburn singing If a Tree Falls in the Forest, Does Anybody Hear? And before that, we heard my commentary about how devastating the earth is part of the corporate plan. It's more cost-effective for the rich to take what they can get before the people wake up. Here on the Old Mo Variety Hour, we are trying to help us all wake up so we can act. At the top of today's show, we heard Christian Williams and Bill Resnick discussing the role of the state, the military and the police and other security forces in holding the capitalist world together while the conditions of life for most of us fall apart, personally and collectively. Kids get in all kinds of trouble, and too often it is policing and some form of imprisonment that is called in to remove problem kids. You can learn about what it's like for kids from a play called Creating Life Inside. It's based on the writings of youth in juvenile detention at McLaren Youth Correctional Facility in Woodburn, and it will debut on January 25th and 26th and February 1st and 2nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Selwood Playhouse at Southeast 9th Avenue in Spokane as part of the Fertile Ground Theater Festival.